received a number of questions about biotherapeutic drainage in an article that I recently posted on my blog, and I thought that maybe doing a simulcast about optimizing your health would be helpful to understand the purpose of biotherapeutic drainage. Today on this special simulcast of the Ask Dr. Gill podcast, we're going to discuss why biotherapeutic drainage is helpful, and the context is optimizing your health. So stay tuned. Welcome to Ask Dr. Gill. I'm Dr. Gill Winkleman, and today on the podcast, I want to discuss optimizing your health, how this plays out in terms of helping people understand what it is that I'm doing in terms of naturopathy, and also in terms of biotherapeutic drainage, because I think there were a number of questions that people had about the remedies and so forth. And this is more about the purpose as opposed to the actual remedies themselves, if that makes sense. So let's just jump into it. So the first thing is to understand what optimal health is. And what we are doing is focusing on what your total health capacity is as opposed to being quote unquote perfect. And it's kind of like if you think of it in terms of showering and bathing, you don't just do it once and you're done. You need to do it on a regular basis to stay clean. And health is no different. We have to do these certain things to keep our body in shape, whether it's stretching or eating right or exercising, drinking water, etc., breathing. These are the pieces that are very important in terms of how do we begin to optimize our health and reach this homeostasis, if you will. And I'm going to talk about toxin levels and removing toxins here in a little bit. But I want to talk about the current paradigm, and I think I've talked about this in another topic. And part of the challenge as a holistic doctor that I face is people are looking for sort of this symptom relief in terms of how they can feel better right away. And the problem is that this isn't really what health is about. And you know, it's not that we don't want to help symptoms. It's that symptoms are important for a variety of reasons. And so if you just remove the symptom, you're not necessarily figuring out what the underlying issue is. And I actually believe that symptoms are important because they give us clues to understand what's out of balance, both in our body, but also it could be in our lives as well. And, you know, I mean, if you're working a job where you feel really, really tired at the end of the day, it may not be that you're the problem. It may be that there's something at the workplace that's the problem. But that's not the way our system is run. And there's other people who talk about this in terms of mental health. You know, mental health in this country, in the United States, has been really under a lot of strain for many, many years. It definitely got worse with the COVID-19 pandemic. But what is interesting is that what's considered abnormal, quote unquote, is when people don't fit into the structure of the system. And sometimes the system is the issue. So, all right. So with optimal wellness, what we want to do is we want to look at the symptoms as the clues to find what's underlying. And once you can figure out what the underlying cause of the symptoms is, then you can bring the rest of the body back into balance. And, you know, as a quick example, If someone has, say, menopausal symptoms, and in fact, this came up recently for me because someone asked me about herbs for their menopausal symptoms, and different herbs work really, really well, but they only work if you understand what the cause of the symptom is. And so if you don't know what that is, then it's harder to figure out what herb to use. And, you know, I mean, sometimes you try different herbs and see what happens, and then you find the underlying cause that way. It's very valid. So, but understanding what the underlying cause is really, really important. And I'm going to talk about four basic things that have to do with underlying causes: genetics, habits, elimination, and early childhood. And early childhood may not be what you think it is. Although trauma can be a part of that, it has to do with development and developmental issues that happen. So epigenetics, and I have a course about this. If you look at my website, askdrgill.com, I offer several courses, but one of which is about when to or not to take folic acid. And folic acid, I'm using that in the generic. That could be folate, that could be folinic acid, it could be methylfolate. And part of the issue that I talk about is that folate is a very powerful epigenetic mediator in a variety of different ways. And what does that mean? So I was fortunate enough to be peripherally involved in Human Genome Project. And one of the researchers I worked with map chromosome 22 almost single-handedly, kind of interestingly. That project started in the late 1980s, and we were expecting to find at least 100,000 genes. It took, 10, 15 years-ish to get the full sequence of the DNA, of human DNA. And they found less than 23,500 genes in the human body. That number, by the way, has changed over the years. It's gone down, it's gone back up. But it's around that number. And humans have fewer genes than a Pinot Noir. And I think that we could all agree that there is more complexity in terms of the adaptability, function and so forth in a human than a Pinot Noir grape. But the question is how? And the changes in DNA in the sequence doesn't explain why people are different. It's changes in the variance of the expression. In other words, it's not the gene itself per se, it's what genes get turned on and off and when they get turned on. And that is the key component of the genetics. And this is partially why I don't do genetic testing as much in my work, because it's more about how is the gene being expressed. So, and here's an example. We've seen, and there's a bunch of experiments that have been done like this, where we've seen generational changes in DNA expression. So you can take mice, for example, that are white, white fur mice, and change their diet, and their offspring will be brown because of the diet. And what's wild is you can take that offspring who have the same genes as the white mice, by the way, change the diet back to the original diet, and they will still give birth to brown mice. So there's been something that's changed on that DNA. And we look at it in terms of tagging on the DNA. So there's something that attaches that tells the body to use or not use those particular genes. I don't have this in the slide, but you can take the offspring of the white mice, change it to a third diet, and they will change back to being white, or their offspring will change back. So it's really interesting, right? Same DNA, because these are transgenic mice that are identical, but their expression changes because of their food intake. And this is, I think, a lot of what we're seeing in terms of health in our country, by the way, is chemical additives in the foods, artificial things, things in the environment. There's thousands and thousands of chemicals now in the environment that weren't there even 30 years ago. So that's affecting our body as well. And that brings us to elimination, because elimination then becomes really, really important. How do we remove these toxins from the system? So, you know, when we're producing stuff in our bodies, that is also producing a toxic material waste product as well. And if you can't eliminate those properly, then the body becomes impaired in terms of its balance. And I'll get to that in a minute. So the organs, the main organs of elimination are the kidneys, the lungs, and the GI tract. Now, secondarily, we have the skin as well. The skin can be used for elimination as well. Sweat, a lot of times we remove toxins via sweat. But sometimes if it's going out the skin, that's when you get rashes, you get breakout, that sort of thing. And that usually happens when the other three areas are blocked. And so if you think of the body as a cistern, where there's a bucket with a valve at the bottom, the valve is the lungs, kidney, and the digestive tract. And the body, you know, is getting too much toxic stress that the valve gets clogged or is blocked. That's when you start seeing symptoms, skin issues. You start getting allergies, you start getting musculoskeletal changes, you get hormonal changes, you get mental health, mental emotional changes as well. And this is when our bodies really become, you know, this is when we start to see symptoms. And the process has been happening long before. So biotherapeutic drainage is actually working at this level. It's helping open up the lungs, the kidneys, the digestive tracts. Now, there are remedies that work in other systems, the cardiovascular, nervous, hormonal, and immune system as well, to balance things. And sometimes those bring symptom relief, you know, as well. And it can move toxins out of those systems. You know, for example, we tend to store heavy metals in fat tissue. And a lot of our fat is actually in our nervous system, and particularly in our brains, because the body has these sheaths around the nerves, and there's a lot of fat cells. So oftentimes when you start treating mercury toxicity, for example, if it moves too quickly, if stuff is moving out of the body too quickly, it can actually damage tissue because the body can't deal with it quickly enough. And so this is where a biotherapeutic drainage approach can be really, really helpful for patients, for you, because it's going to be a gentler approach than just, you know, get everything out all at once, because sometimes our bodies can't handle that. So, and of course, I love talking about habits, and, you know, I was going to do a workshop about this, but this is more about specific habits, making sure you have a good diet, doing castor oil packs daily. That's going to help your body eliminate toxins, breathing exercises, making sure you're taking the right supplements, and kind of think of it as a deposit into the wellness bank. So as we move up this staircase, as you're doing more and more things that are helping you feel better, you're exercising regularly, you're eating well, you're eliminating, you're doing your castor oil packs, you're taking the supplements, over time that builds up. And so you get to a place where if you miss a night of sleep, you're gonna be fine. You know, it's like you might be a little tired that day, the next day, but it's not gonna knock you out. Whereas if you're at the bottom of the staircase and you have a bad night's sleep, it can be really, really bad. So, and this is an important, really important thing to think about. Habits are a commitment to yourself. You're honoring yourself by doing these things. And so this is kind of the piece that I think is underrated in health a lot of the time. And I have this about the gut, which is kind of I wasn't sure where to put this, but we'll put this in here. When you have a normal digestive tract flora, it's actually protecting your gut from disruption. And if you have a dysfunctional digestive tract, what can happen is when you eat something, it's going to go through, because basically there's gaps in the cells, between the cells in your gut, and that's actually to absorb food. And you want it there so you can absorb small particles, small molecules of food. But what happens is if there's not a good digestive flora there, those gaps become really big. And so, you know, for example, I've had patients do food sensitivity testing, and they come back sensitive to everything. And usually that's a sign of dysfunction in the digestive tract, not that they're sensitive to the foods, because they're reacting to so many. And I think this is an important piece to be aware of. But this is, I put it in habits because one of the things that I recommend to a lot of patients is a probiotic, a good probiotic. So when there's gut dysfunction, you can have all kinds of things happening in the body. And part of that is most of the neurotransmitters in your are produced in your gut. So the brain gives feedback to the gut, but the gut is also giving feedback to the brain. And there is an inflammatory response that goes between the two in the vagus nerve. And I just read something in a study that was done that was really interesting, that there's a belief that schizophrenics have very bad dysbiosis. And so the scientists basically disrupted the gut of mice. I think it was mice, it might have been rats, but one of the two rodents. And what they did is they gave them schizophrenia, and then they transplanted that into other mice, the bad gut flora, and gave the other mice schizophrenia. And when they took good gut flora, they cured the schizophrenia. So there's definitely a correlation or some kind of correlation here between what's happening in the gut and what's happening in the brain. And we think it's vagus nerve mediated, because the vagus nerve, which starts in the brainstem, does actually control gut. But it's actually a two-way street. And I've talked about this in other, I've talked about this, I'm sure, in another podcast, that the brain has its own immune system and can create an inflammatory response that the body doesn't know how to deal with it. And the reverse is also true. So there can be an inflammatory response. The brain's like, well, what's going on here? Like, what do we do with this? So this is where the, you know, protecting the blood gut barrier and the blood brain barrier is really important. And the basic treatment guidelines help with this. So making sure you get adequate sleep, making sure you get time outside, making sure you get enough water, doing the castor oil, doing this dry skin brushing. You're cleaning your system out, right, in a sense. So that's kind of it. All right, so let's talk about early childhood. And this is really, in a sense, where the magic happens with UNDOS and the biotherapeutic drainage. Now, I'm going to put trauma aside for a minute, because that's actually not what I'm talking about here, even though I do talk a lot about it. It has to do with how our organ systems develop. Now, when you're born, you have all of them. That's not what I'm talking about. What I'm talking about is when do they begin to come online fully? And as an example, you know, when you look at a teenage brain and a teenager driving and making decisions, they make very poor decisions. Well, that's because their brains haven't fully formed. And, you know, there's a debate of when the brain is fully formed, age 22, age 23, 26. And some people are saying it's never fully formed, but there's a maturation process that happens. So if you notice, this is two sets of triangles. The back triangle was pointing down. Those are the organs of elimination: kidney, adrenal, digestion, lungs. And those are the ages that they come online. And if there's a disruption in one of those ages. The rest of it is also disrupted, and it's also out of balance. So if you had birth trauma, for example, you may end up with digestive issues or asthma as a result of this, right? And so understanding the ages is important in terms of being able to go back. And the reality is very few people remember what happened to them before the age of four. So that can be an issue. But sometimes you hear stories of stuff. And the undas are specific to the areas. Or they can be. So oftentimes I'll prescribe undas towards one of those points, like digestion. The other interesting thing about this diagram is that a lot of times the symptom is showing up on one side of the star, but it's actually originating on the other side. So for example, if you have teenage acne, endocrine, age 12 to 17, often that is because your digestion is out of balance. And if you treat the digestion, the acne goes away. Likewise, if you're having anxiety, for example, often that's an adrenal issue. And so you sort of can work through this through biotherapeutic drainage, helping the body release whatever it needs to release in those systems. And it's really a beautiful, eloquent system to help people heal and feel better. And this is kind of the approach that I take towards health. And oftentimes what I'm doing is I'm working in the left side to begin with, kidneys, the lungs, the digestion, to help the body be able to release whatever it needs to in the other side, the nervous system, the heart, or the endocrine system. And oftentimes when we give undas, people don't notice any difference at the beginning. It's only after the second or third set that they start to notice it. So that's not 100% true. But the goal is not to do the one, the goal of undas is not this. That isn't the goal. We're not giving you undas. We're not giving you gemmas. We're not giving gens to treat the symptom, although we might get some symptom. The goal is to help remove the toxins in the system, to help de-stress the system, to help the system be better at eliminating the toxins on its own. And if you think of it this way, it's like if you wear deodorant, I'm going to use this as an example, you don't have to shower as often. But if you don't wear deodorant and you live in a hot climate, you might have to shower twice a day or three times a day, And it's because you're becoming more and more, stinky as the day wears on. So maybe not the best example. But anyway, the last thing is that the healing process is basically helping to decrease inflammation, eliminate toxins, and palliate symptoms as appropriate. And sometimes there can be a worsening of symptoms to start, and then you start to feel better. And that isn't necessarily a bad thing when things get bad. And this is where the art of medicine really is, because it's knowing, that shouldn't be happening, or yeah, that's part of the process that's happening. And really good physicians who are experienced know, that we don't need to worry about that. Let's not try and palliate that. Let's work on helping the person feel better. So I hope you got something out of this, and I hope that this is helpful. And if you have questions or comments, please feel free to leave it below. If you're watching this on YouTube, you can also email me at gil@ askdrgil.com. That's askdrgil.com. And I have a lot of great information on my website, and I hope you enjoyed this, and I look forward to seeing you next time. All right, you take care.